So this morning we're going to finish up on depression. We started that last week. We'll finish that up this week. We're talking about, of course, just how the resources our Christian faith gives to help us deal with these problems that we all struggle with, but we don't often bring our faith to bear upon, things like anger. And next week we'll wrap up this entire series by talking about bitterness and forgiveness, and we'll talk about that next week. That'll be the last one. So last week, just by way of review, we talked a little bit about depression, what it is. You know, it affects all of us, you know, believers, unbelievers. We looked at a couple of examples. You know, Spurgeon is a classic example of here's a Christian pastor who struggled with serious depression. It's pretty well documented. He wrote about it a lot. And throughout our life, we all experience sadness, melancholy, whatever you want to call it. It's a continuum. So we got into that a little bit and really focused on the difference last week between sadness, the normal sadness, and clinical depression. And we focused on that. And a really important point, it's okay to be sad. It's not, you don't, right? This is a messed up world. We lose people. We lose relationships, marriages, jobs. We lose our health. And when those things happen, we're going to be sad. And that was well pointed out last week. Yeah, there's a lot of pressure culturally. If you're not happy all the time, there's something wrong with you. And that's just not true from a biblical standpoint. When we lose things, it's sad. There is a place for tears. And that actually leads to the hope we have of redemption, that place where there will be no more tears and the curse of sin will be finally gone. So this week, I just want to walk through, if we are struggling with depression, or when we struggle with depression, or we know someone who is, or just sadness, what resources do we have as Christians? What's kind of a plan from a Christian perspective for trying to deal with it and trying to move forward out of it? What's a biblical path forward for those who are struggling with depression? And obviously, there's no magic bullet here. I want to make sure that's clear. It's not like you do all these things or you do this and there's a guarantee you'll never struggle with sadness or depression again. That's, the Bible doesn't give us that. But I do think that we do have resources as Christians to at least give us hope in depression. And hope is actually the first part of getting out of it. One of the key things that depression and hopelessness go hand in hand. The Bible gives us hope. So I'm going to overview these things. If you have questions, feel free to stop. Interrupt. I did ask, we're going to get to a spot and talk about medical treatment. I asked Ethan if he would share a few thoughts from his perspective as a doctor on medical treatments for those struggling with depression. We'll get there in a few minutes. But I'm going to be speaking mainly, of course, from a perspective as a pastor. You know, what would I encourage somebody, myself, you to do if you or someone you know is really struggling with depression? So here we go. Number one, and these are in no particular order, although they kind of flow. So number one, speak to God. I mean, it's really, it's nothing too complicated. Cry out to God. Pray. I mean, that's the first resource that God gives us. I mean, when you're hurting, when you're depressed, and that you are hurting when you're depressed, the natural thing to do is cry out. You know, anytime you're hurt, you cry. You're going to cry out. You're going to cry. You're in pain, and God invites us to do that to Him. And so, right up front, anytime we're suffering, but when we're suffering with depression, we have a question, kind of a crossroads right there: is will we involve God in our depression or not? We're going to cry out. Will we cry out to Him? Welch, actually, again from this book, which if you want to go deeper, recommend this. It's a good read. He's got a whole chapter in this book on crying out to God, and he puts it this way. With depression, we stand at a crossroads. Will we cry out to the Lord or not? You can sit in silence or cry out to the Lord. You can cry on your bed or you can cry to the Lord. These are the two choices, and he's right. I mean, You're in pain, so you got to make a choice. Are you going to bring that pain to God or not? And God actually invites us to bring that pain to Him. And it really is the first step in walking through depression. Now, Welch says some helpful things here about crying out to God, praying in this time. He says, don't wait until you feel motivated before you do that, because then you'll never do it. Because you're not going to feel like doing that. That's one of the hallmarks of depression. You're not going to feel like going to church. You're not going to feel the spiritual high. You just have to do it no matter what, because feelings don't define faith. You know, don't judge the character of your faith by how you're feeling. Faith is simply being willing to turn to the Lord when you're hurting. That's faith, whether you feel like it or not. And that's the first point. And of course, God has given us words in the Bible to help us cry out to Him when we're hurting. This is what's so great about the Scriptures, right? That there's lots of stuff in there, but primarily the Psalms. And if you remember when we looked at the Psalms, there's a whole category of Psalms called the Psalms of Lament. And there's more Psalms of Lament than any other kind of Psalm in the Bible. And the Psalms of Lament are just that. They're Psalms that give voice to suffering and sadness and loss and depression. I mean, you can't read some of the Psalms of Lament without hearing some serious depression going on. I think I don't know if I mentioned this or not, but there was an article that was written by a guy named Carl Truman, published in a book of essays a while ago, called, and the title of the article that he wrote was called, "What Can Miserable Christians Sing on Sunday?" And it was more of a critique of the contemporary American church and the fact that everything has to be so positive and upbeat all the time. And everything has to be kind of happy, clappy, and we've got to put smiles on our faces. And he says, he's critiquing that and says, but that's just not true to life. You know, if you had a miscarriage this past week, if you lost your job this week, you know, that doesn't really, if you're just struggling with depression, that doesn't fit coming into worship. We need that too, but it doesn't fit life to have just positive upbeat. And he says also it's not true to the Bible, because if you read the God's hymn book, the Psalter, most of them are actually kind of minor key songs. God actually encourages us to give voice to our hurts, to our struggles. This is a quote from Truman in that essay. "The human condition is a poor one, and a diet of unremittingly jolly choruses and hymns inevitably creates an unrealistic horizon of expectation, which sees our normal life as supposed to be some triumphalistic street party." And so the point is, God has inspired these psalms that give voice to distress, sorrow. He's given us a language which allows us to cry out, even, you know, with the deepest agonies of the soul, that, you know, even on the dark night of the soul. The Psalms helps us give voice to that, and actually shows it's appropriate to do that. It's okay to do that. And they don't just help us give voice to it, but I think, you know, praying, crying out to God, praying the Psalms of Lament when we're really depressed, they actually help us. I mean, even giving voice to hurts, pain, depression is itself helpful, because one, it reminds us that we're not alone, right? God's people for centuries and millennia past have struggled with these types of feelings. My God, why have you forsaken me? God, where are you, God? You know, why don't you? Psalm 88 is a very, very dark. You know, my tears are on my bed continually. So we're not alone in our struggles, right? God has, Christians have given voice to this, but these psalms also move us to hope, which of course is what we need most of all, because the psalms, they start with lament, but they always kind of reflect on God's character, His promises, and try to take us there. And to quote Welch here, he says, what these psalms help us do is to straighten the trajectory of our lives. Using the words He gives us, God gently turns our hearts towards Him. Instead of everything bending back into ourselves, we're able to look outside of ourselves and look at God. And of course, that's one of the hallmarks of depression. When you're depressed, it's hard to get out of yourself. You're kind of turned inward and thinking about yourself, your problems. The Psalms give voice to that, but then try to direct our gaze off of us onto a faithful God, a God who loves us, who cares for us. So that's really the first, you know, I mean, this is not rocket science, but from a biblical perspective, the first move is really just to be willing to pray. When you're suffering, when you're depressed, pray, cry out to God. Involve him in your depression. And if you have no words yourself, use the words that he's given to us. All right, let me go one more and then we'll stop and see if there's any discussion. Number two, so talk to God is the first one. Number two is listen to God. Again, nothing rocket science here, because God speaks to us. And he speaks to us even in our depression. And the question is, are we willing to listen to it? Are we willing to hear it? There are several things that he says that particularly will help us if we're struggling with depression. And this is really important, actually, because Welch makes an excellent point on this. You know, we as humans, we're always interpreting the things that happen to us. You know, things happen to us, but then we have our own interpretive take on what it means. And and he says the way we interpret these things make a difference. You know, it's usually for someone to get really depressed. This is the point. For someone to get really depressed, it's not just that bad things have happened to us. We've lost. We're struggling in an area. It's that we have interpreted that event in a skewed way, which kind of spirals it out of control. And so that's why we really need to listen to God, because God helps us to interpret what's going on in our lives in a way that will give us a trajectory of hope, not a trajectory of worst case scenario, however we normally think about it. So we need to listen to God. Now, what are some of the things that God says to us in our depression that are hopeful, that are helpful? First of all, God reminds us that he's in control. He's sovereign even over our depression. And so in other words, even the periods of our life where we just feel so sad, so sorrowful, so depressed, to quote the Heidelberg Catechism, even those periods come not by chance, but by his fatherly hand. You know, there's that, what is the providence of God? That nothing in my life, not health or sickness or fruitful or barren years or life or death, comes by chance, but by his fatherly hand. And so even our depression, God is in complete control of that, and that didn't come into our life outside of his power or care. And sometimes even thinking of that, I've heard many people I've heard reflect on, you know, and Spurgeon might have been one of them, I can't quite remember, but he said, when I realized that, it actually brought me some relief. When I realized that God is actually in control of this isn't some, you know, something outside of his control, and he knows this is happening, and in some sense he allowed it to happen, that actually helps me. Now, why? Well, because it means, and this is the second thing God says to us in our depression, there's a purpose. There is a purpose even for these dark nights of the soul, which is a way it's been described famously, for these seasons of depression. Welch is really helpful here. He's got a chapter in his book on suffering. And he says, you know, one of the ways you have to think about your depression, if you're struggling with it, is you have to think of it as a form of suffering. And that actually is very helpful, because the Bible, you know, if you search through the Bible and look for the word depressed or depression, you won't find too many spots. But if you look for suffering, the whole Bible is about suffering. And the whole Bible gives us hope, is intended to give us hope in suffering. And so if we view our depression as suffering, that means, you know, as a trial in our life, you know, because that's what it is. Depression is a trial. It's a dark valley. It's a difficulty. And if we view our depression that way, that means that we can apply all of God's promises to sufferers to us in our depression. And again, to quote Welch here, he says, "Without Scripture's interpretation, all of our suffering is meaningless and random and senseless." And of course, this is a secular view of suffering in our life. In a secular view where there is no God, we're all here by chance and the world's going nowhere, then yes, suffering is to be avoided at all costs. It doesn't do anything good. It's just an interruption of our lives. But from a biblical perspective, that's none of that is true, right? We're created. There's a sovereign God who cares for us. And even suffering has a purpose to it. So Welch says, God really does speak in our suffering, and we have good reason to believe that the words he says are good and are powerful enough to lighten our pain. And so, for example, you know, Welch in his book uses the well-known passage from James 1, "Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness, and let it have its full effect, that you will be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing." He says, have you ever thought about applying that particular verse to periods of depression and struggle? Because you should, because it is a trial. But what that verse reminds us of is, you know, one, God is in complete control of it, and two, he's got a good purpose for it. And one of those is that you will grow as a person. God is refining us. He's deepening our faith, our dependence upon him. He's at work, even if it doesn't feel like he's working. And this season of life, as dark as it feels, can and ultimately will be used for the good of all who love God and are called according to his purpose. And he kind of says, you know, you've got to think of our depression that way. We've got to be willing to apply, listen to God speak when he says, I'm in control, and ultimately I have a purpose for this. And ultimately it's a good one. And I know it doesn't feel that way, but you will grow. I mean, there's all sorts of things. Let me give you a quote from a guy named Milton Vincent, who I love this quote. It's a little lengthy. I'll pause. I may not read the whole thing, but it's from his book, The Gospel Primer, which is a great little book. And it's really just his reflection on how, if what God says is true, how does that change my perspective on the difficulties of my life? And here's what he says. He says, more than anything else, the gospel, you know, the good news of Christianity, enables me to embrace my sufferings and actually position myself to gain full benefit from them. For the gospel is the one great permanent circumstance in which I live and move, and every hardship in my life, and that would include periods of depression, is allowed by God only because it serves the gospel purposes in me. And when I view my circumstances in this light, I realize that the gospel makes genuinely good news out of every other aspect of my life, including my hardest trials. The good news about my trials is that God is forcing them to bow to his gospel purposes and to do good unto me by improving my character and making me more conformed to the image of Christ. And he goes on and says, I can then embrace my trials as friends and allow them to do God's good work in me. Now, that's radical. That's a radical way of thinking about our suffering, but you know, it's consistent with what God says. It's hard to get there. That's part of why we need to pray. And again, he's not suggesting there that pain is good or that it feels good, but that if we really believe what God says, I mean, it's the fight of faith. I mean, I've found myself thinking, I might talk about this Christmas Sunday, but I've been thinking this Advent season, boy, what if I lived as if everything God said was actually true? You know, how would that change my life? What if it's all true? What if it's all true? What if the baby is true? And of course it is. But boy, it's hard to live that way sometimes, you know. But if it's all true, then he's right. And that doesn't take away the pain, but it does give us an incredible hope, right? Even in our severest depression and discouragement. So there's two things God says. I'm in control. There is a purpose for this. It's a good purpose because I'm your father. Three, he says it won't last forever. And of course, I'm not going to dwell on this, but the Bible gives us an eternal perspective on all of our sufferings, but depression would be included in that. You know, they are these light and momentary afflictions compared to the eternal weight of glory, which is beyond all comparison. It won't last forever. Even if it lasts our whole life, even if that were to happen, compared to eternity, it is a short time. And finally, and this is really unique to the Christian faith, I find this very hopeful. Finally, God says to us, I understand your depression, and I'm with you in it. You know, it's not just about I'm going to, you know, use it for your good. I actually understand it, and I'm going to walk. I'm with you. And this is, you know, we have to remember Jesus Christ, you know, sang all of the laments. My God, why are you forsaking me? Those were his words. He actually entered into our suffering. God himself entered into the suffering and depression that we all experience. And he experienced it himself in a way that we never could, right? The man of sorrows, acquainted with grief. Hebrews says that in the days of his flesh, Jesus offered up loud cries and tears to his Father because of just the weight of what he was doing. And he sang the laments, right? He was forsaken by God. He knows the pain of mental anguish and depression. And so that's why, of course, Hebrews can tell us that he is a merciful and faithful high priest to us. That's why we can cry out to him with confidence. It's not just he's some God that's removed from our suffering. He entered into it to ultimately remove it from us forever. And then he says, I'm with you in it. I walk with you. So these are the four things God says to us, a perspective on. But we have to believe it. We have to believe it. And that can be really hard when we're depressed because we don't necessarily feel that closeness to God. But that doesn't, you know, we can't define our faith by our feelings. But God's promises are true despite whether or not we feel them. And thank God for that. Thank God for that. All right, let me pause right there. See if there's any comments or questions. Gloria?
I have ended up praying sometimes about, Lord, please change me or change the circumstances. And I find that he does both, which makes everything very palatable.
Yep. All right. Well, we'll keep moving. So number three, talk to God, listen to God. And then number three, you know, probe your own depression. Probe it. That's the third thing. Examine it. Try to understand it. Now, that's not to suggest that you're going to be able to fully understand it. Sometimes in really severe cases of depression, there may not be any cause. You know, we talked about that last week. In severe depression, is marked out by just not really, you're just sad and you're not even sure why. But in many cases, even though if there won't be an exact cause or you can't pinpoint it, there are things that you're going to be able to look at to say, you know, this is feeding into my depression. Try to understand these things. The psalmist says to himself, I think it's Psalm 42, right? Why are you downcast, O my soul? Why are you within turmoil within me? I mean, he's asking himself, Why are you depressed? You know, what's going on in my life? Why am I downcast? And then, of course, he charges himself to hope in God. But it's a good question. We should ask ourselves that. We should try to probe our own depression or help somebody else probe theirs. And, of course, there's various reasons why that can feed into this. We talked a lot about that last week, so I won't get back into it. But other people's sins against us can lead to pain and hurt and sadness. Our own bodies, you know, our own mortality and sickness can feed into it. Spiritual warfare plays a part, according to the scripture. But there's also many, you know, other spiritual factors that can lead to or really amplify depression. And again, I can only give the briefest summary. Welch has got about five or six chapters in this book where he lists several, I think five or six spiritual factors that often underlie depression. And this, again, this is why it's important to probe it, things that can lead to it. So he's got a whole chapter there on fear and anxiety. And talks about how high levels of anxiety and fear, if left unattended, often do lead to depression and can be amplified by depression. And so Welch, and again, we don't have time to do this, but Welch says a lot of times helping get out of depression is understanding that and find your fears. The Bible addresses fear and anxiety. and work on that area. And that's actually going to help your depression, because this is part of what's feeding into it, out of control anxiety. Welch says, find your fears, because they may be contributing to the feelings of depression, and there's much that can be done to alleviate them. And he's right, because the Bible speaks to that. And he, again, I'm not going to go into all this. He lists a bunch of common fears that he sees, he has found. Another thing is anger. Anger. That's a whole chapter on that. He says anger is a very common friend of depression. And if it doesn't always lead into it, but often it's revealed by it. And he spends some time dealing with that. So again, we got to probe our depression. What's underneath it? What's leading to it? Dashed hopes. He's got a chapter on dashed hopes. And of course, we can probably understand this one more. He says, you know, depression can set in because we finally gave up on the hopes that we had for our life. You know, when you're young and healthy, you envision your life to be a certain way, right? You just do. You envision yourself being happily married. Well, maybe you've been divorced a few times and you're single, and you know, your hopes have been dashed. You realize this. No, you envisioned having kids and you never had kids. You envisioned yourself having a job that could, you know, that you were fully satisfied in and paid you lots of money, and that did never materialize. And so at some point, people just give up at this point. You know, our hopes are dashed, and we just choose to stop hoping. And that often fuels depression, the giving up on these hopes. And as he puts it, instead of hoping again, we decide that we've had enough and we're just going to remain hopeless. And that really does feed into depression and can lead to it. And so if that's the case, you've got to address that. I mean, you're not going to move out of depression without dealing with those dashed hopes. And of course, again, this is not the place to do that. I mean, that would be another session, really, to talk about, how, you know, thinking through, you know, what happens when our worst fears come true? What happens when the things we hope for in our lives don't materialize? That's going to happen to some extent to all of us. How do we respond to that? But you have to deal with that before you're going to get out of depression, is this point. Another thing he talks about is failure and shame. Failure and shame often feed into depression, feeling like a failure, feeling ashamed of yourself. Right? Dash hopes happened when you don't get what you wanted, either through external circumstances, someone thwarted your plans, but to really feel like a failure is when you begin to believe, I didn't get what I wanted because I'm a failure, because I didn't have what it took or something. And you point your finger at yourself. You haven't measured up to your own expectations or the expectations of others, and your life's a failure. And that, as you can understand why, really feeds into and fuels depression. And so again, if that's part of it, you've got to deal with that component if you're ever going to move out of depression. You've got to address the failure shame with the hope of the gospel. And of course, it does give us that. And again, we're not going to get into that. But you can see depression travels hand in hand with a low self-worth. Failure and shame lead to a low self-worth. And so you've got to probe those aspects. And the last thing is, you know, guilt and legalism. Strong feelings of guilt, feeling guilty, lots of regrets. These also feed into and often cause depression, periods of depression. And again, to move out of depression, if this is what's feeding into it, you've got to deal with the guilt. You've got to deal with the regrets. You've got to deal with those things. You're not going to be able to get out of depression. That's what I mean by probe your own depression. Try to understand as much as possible, you know, what's behind it, what led to it, what factors exist that, you know, was there a time when you weren't, and what kind of brought it on, and when you feel depressed, how do you feel? Do you feel really angry, or do you feel really guilty or ashamed? And you've got to wrestle with those things and then try to get at each component to move on. Now, of course, that's not easy to do by yourself, and that leads to the fourth point, which is you seek community and counselors in your depression, right? Don't struggle with depression alone, particularly severe depression. And of course, that's not natural. Depression leads us to naturally isolate ourselves. We don't want to talk to people. And even when we do, other people will offer encouragement. We're not going to believe them just because we're just part of the depression. But Welch says you've got to resist your depression upon this point. Don't let your depression excuse you from forming relationships with other people and loving them. You will just deepen your despair. Loving others, it's not simply a duty. It is the way you are designed. God created you to trust Him and love others. Find a way to love others. Even if, you don't feel like it, thank them, greet them, pray for them, listen to them. And of course, this is where the church becomes important. The church, we have a built-in community of people where hopefully, we can share the fact that we're really struggling with depression, ask for prayer, have people that are at least listening to us, able to listen, bear some of those burdens, pray with us, and perhaps offer some bit of counsel, encouragement, challenge us when our interpretations of our life are skewed, and remind us what God's Word says. That's important. It's important to have a community. You're probably not going to pull yourself out of depression by yourself, like most other things. We need other people into our life, and if it's really severe, then it may need to go more than just a community. It may be talk to pastors and seek perhaps medical treatment for it. So, and that's the next step. Consider medical treatment. As we talked about last week, Welch and most biblical counselors are not opposed to any medical treatment. They just as we've been talking about, we have to recognize it's not the fix all, right? Because medical treatment can help physical symptoms, but if what's leading to our depression is guilt, shame, anger, dashed hopes, right? Medical treatment is not going to fix that. It may help us feel better so that we can work on it. But again, medical treatment can be very helpful. It could bring us to a place. It could take the edge off. As Welch says, it won't answer all of our spiritual doubts, fears, frustrations, or failures. So at this point, I wanted to ask Ethan, who is a doctor, if he wanted to share a little bit of treating depression from wherever you want. You can come up here. You can stay there. Treating depression from a medical standpoint, and if you'd share that with us, it'd be great.
Thanks. Thank you. For those of you who don't know, I practice internal medicine at Thurlby Clinic, which means I take care of adults in a primary care setting. So, as you can imagine, depression's a pretty common thing that comes up frequently. And for the folks that were around last week, you may remember some comments that I made about how there's a great awareness in our culture about depression. There's the means for caring for it in our country, it's been medicalized a lot, and a lot of the resources are focused into the medical arena as opposed to the mental health arena. So a lot of it gets shunted down at the level where I am, which is a little bit challenging. I want to just say kind of three things or make three notes. The first two kind of overlap with what Scott's already mentioned. I always tell people that depression is a whole person issue. So it's not just your body chemistry. It's not just your mind as an organ. It's a whole person issue. And so to deal with it, it has to be a whole person issue, or the solutions have to be a whole person. And that means we have a lot of tools in our toolkit, and we need to make use of all of them to get the best success. And the medical research suggests that. There are clearly studies that show that vigorous exercise is equivalent to antidepressants in terms of success rate and alleviating depressive symptoms. So it's a whole person issue, so it's a whole person solution, and so we try to review that with people. Number two is that it's a team effort. Avoiding isolation is critical. That it's not just them, it's not just me, it's not just me and them, it's relationships, people in their lives, the greater community around them, and engaging the community is really important. It also means that since it's a team effort and they're on the team, they have to take some responsibility for helping themselves as much as they are able to. And every person's situation is a little bit different, but that's important because there are a lot of things in a depressive situation you don't have control over. So focusing on the things you do have control over is a step towards recovery, and echoes some of what Scott already said. And then finally, there's the role of medication. And it the role of medication is based on those first two points, which is that, you know, medications are not the answer to everything, but they are another valid tool that the right tool for the right job can make a difference. So you don't use the wrong tool in a situation and expect to get good results. You don't want to use a tool if you don't need it. You don't want to use a bandsaw to clip a piece of paper or something. So finding the right tool and fitting it to the right situation is really important. And so medications can be a tool to help. So I don't want people to place all of their hope and hope for recovery in medications, but I don't want them to just dismiss them out of hand as something that, you know, I'm not crazy or I don't want to mess with my brain or anything. They're just another tool, and exploring whether that's a good fit can be a useful exercise. Doing all this in the context of a relationship with a medical provider is really helpful, because if you don't really know someone very well or anything about them, it's hard to help them work through this whole treatment plan. So that's all I would say about that. With regard to medications, what I always tell people is, again, it's like instead of rowing against a current, you have a current behind you. It doesn't magically fix all your problems, make you happy instantaneously, but it can put a instead of fighting a headwind, it could put a wind at your tail type of scenario. I tell people that the best way to approach the medication is to get it going and just to see how things go over longer periods of time instead of expecting a lot of short-term benefit. And within the world of medications, there are just tons of options, and we usually prescribe based on cost and side effects as opposed to some other factor, because there are a lot of cheap options. And there's usually something that can fit everyone's scenario. And then close up follow-up is always really important to make sure people are making progress. And most importantly, if we're going down that path, to make sure that they continue on something instead of stopping and losing 2 or 3 weeks of their life that could have been 2 or 3 weeks of progress. But the world of medications is a whole world in and of itself. And that's kind of the approach I have to people with depression. The team also can involve mental health professionals where appropriate, and we definitely try to plug people in when we can. So, that's all I got to say.
Do you ever encourage people to get off medications?
Good question. You know, usually what people ask right away is, okay, how long do I have to be on medication? It's like one of the first things people ask. And I kind of smile because I say, well, you know what, we really don't want you to think that way, because that thought process of thinking, when can I get off of it, and creating a deadline for yourself is not very healthy for recovery. The best medical evidence we have is that when you're bad enough to require medication for one of these higher level DSM-4 types of diagnoses, the relapse rates within the first 12 months are so high, and if you think about it, the consequences of relapse are so great that for most people, we tend to think in about year-long chunks. However, once people are getting better, you don't want to use the medication that you don't need to be on. When I counsel people about circumstances for stopping, I usually discourage them from thinking about it this time of the year when it's getting darker, colder, the holidays are bearing down on us, all these types of things, and generally try to focus them on more of a springtime type of thing. But so every situation's a little bit different, but usually we try to get people going and then don't worry so much about 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, but just allow the recovery process to get going. Part of it is because it does take time for the medications to work. And the effect of medications and how that plays out in people's depression is a multi-step process. It helps to maybe change your mood, change your brain chemistry, but once that changes, all these other things have to change. Maybe you have a little bit more energy, a little more emotional strength related to the medication, but then you got to work on all these things, including habits of thoughts, guilt, all these other things. And that takes time, so it's several stages.
Any other questions for Ethan? Thanks.
Okay, just to tie this up, final two thoughts are take one day at a time. That's the next thing. You know, I think it was Elizabeth Elliot who, maybe it wasn't her, I can't remember now, but just said, just do the next thing, right? Particularly when you're suffering, depressed, just do the next thing. And focus on what you have to do today. And the more debilitating the depression is, the more important it probably is to have some sort of structure in place where you're doing similar things at a daily schedule. You eat, you exercise, you work, do the next thing. Just keep putting one foot in front of the other. Pray, go to church, do the next thing. And then my last point is just, persevere in hope, right? This is what the Bible gives us as Christians that really is, it's a fight to believe it, but there's no guarantee, of course, that we're going to be depression-free or ever be depression-free, just as we have no guarantee that there won't be any suffering in our life or that we'll ever get to a suffering-free life here. But the cross of Christ is a sign to us that, one, he entered into our suffering, but two, that we have a hope that's much deeper than just the alleviation of pain now. We have an eternal hope. Again, here we have no lasting city, but we seek the city which is to come. And so we persevere in that hope and keep that in front of us every day. That's all I have. I don't know if there's any other final thoughts or questions.